राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा कृष्ण हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
श्रीमद्भागवतम की आय गौर प्रेमानंदे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 27 टेक्स्ट 17 गम्यताम शक्र भद्रम व क्रियताम मे अनुशासनम अनुशासन स्थियताम स्वाधिकारेषु युक्तैर्वस्तंभवर्जितै गम्यताम शक्रभद्रं वा क्रियताम मे अनुशासनम् स्थियताम स्वाधिकारेषु युक्तैर्वस्तंभवर्जितै गम्यताम शक्रभद्रं वा क्रियताम मे अनुशासनम् स्थियताम स्वाधिकारेषु युक्तैर्वस्तंभवर्जितै
Yeah.
Vaishnavis. Gamyatam, you may go. Shakra, O Indra. Bhadram, good fortune. Va, unto you. Kriyatam, you should execute. Me, my. Anushasanam, order. Sthiyatam, you may remain. Sva, in your own. Adhikareshu, responsibilities. Yuktai, soberly engaged. Vaha, you. Stambha, false pride. Varjitai, devoid of. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Translation: Indra, you may now go. Execute my order and remain in your appointed position as King of Heaven. But be sober without false pride. Purport: Lord Krishna here addresses Indra in the plural form var, because this grave instructions was meant to be a lesson for all the demigods. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanishalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Krupasindhu Bhyayevacha. Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. I'm grateful to be here with all of you today on the occasion of Govardhan Puja. And we look at this pastime today in terms of reciprocations. That who all is Krishna reciprocating with? The particular verse which we just read talks about Krishna's reciprocation with Indra. Gamyatam. Now you can return, Krishna is telling Indra. And basically Krishna is being very compassionate to Indra. He is not really punishing him, but he is protecting him from stambhai, from false pride. So I'll talk about the reciprocation here in broadly five terms. I'll use the acronym GRADE. You know, we all can grade our devotion by seeing how we are reciprocating with different people. And a high grade of devotion involves reciprocation with various devotees, with our equals, with our juniors, with our seniors, with the Lord, with people who are potential devotees, with people who are averse. So it's all about reciprocation. So we'll see how in one pastime the Lord is expertly reciprocating with different people. So now if we consider what all are the reciprocations that are happening. If we consider Krishna is here. So Krishna at one level is reciprocating with the Vrajavasis. At another level, Krishna is reciprocating with Govardhan, whom he lifts up. Then at another level, Krishna is reciprocating with Indra. Now Krishna is actually, toward the end of the pastime, is also reciprocating with the cows. Surabhi cow gets a special role. And then Krishna is also reciprocating with all humans, all human beings, in fact all of posterity. What is he teaching us? So we'll talk about these five reciprocations that are happening in this particular pastime. So let's begin with the character after whom this whole pastime is named. Although we have, for example, a pastime in which, or there are two main pastimes in the Vrajalila where two big devatas are bewildered by Krishna, or they confront Krishna and they are humbled. Who are those two devatas? Brahma and Indra. But we will see a significant difference, that the pastime in which Brahma is bewildered is called Brahma Vimohan Leela. But in the pastime in which Indra is bewildered is not called Indra Vimohan Leela. Why? In one sense, Indra is almost like a side character. He is a significant character, but Krishna is doing much more. So in that sense, between Brahma and Indra, if you see, of course you could say that Brahma is a greater devata. But there are other dissimilarities. So Brahma Vimohan Leela is directly focused on his name. But it's not Indra Vimohan Leela, because while Krishna is reciprocating with Indra and elevating and enlightening him, Krishna is also doing many other things. Of course, in Brahma Vimohan Leela also Krishna is doing other things. But in this particular pastime, the reciprocations between Krishna and his devotees are much richer. And now, that is why this pastime is called as Govardhan Leela. It is not Indra Vimohan, it is Govardhan Leela. Govardhan becomes a very central character. So now, if we consider from the perspective that, say, if Krishna's purpose had been primarily to humble Indra, Indra had become arrogant and Krishna wanted to humble him, Krishna could have done it in any way. Just like when Arjuna, towards the end of his life, tried to shoot arrows and he shot, but his arrows wouldn't even reach the target. What to speak of piercing the target? So Krishna could have taken away the power of Indra. That means Krishna could have just stopped Indra. Indra could have said, okay, rains, thunder, go down, clouds, go down. And he was just saying nothing is happening. Krishna could have taken his power away at that time. But Krishna did not do that. Krishna, in one sense, let Indra express and exhibit all his power. His power was exhibited, but the power had no result. It's one thing to have no power. It's another thing to have power and to have no result of that power. It's like, in some ways, it is more distressing. If somebody is fighting with a gun and they are shooting, and suddenly somebody comes and takes their gun away, they just can't be shooting, they're just pressing their fingers, nothing is happening. But now that is bad enough, but somebody is shooting with a gun and they're hitting the opposite target and nothing is happening to the target. That is even more unnerving, actually. What kind of being is this? What kind of armor is this person wearing? That nothing seems to be happening over here. So the first thing that Krishna does here is, talking about the acronym, Krishna is glorifying. Krishna is glorifying Govardhan over here. That the whole pastime is to demonstrate how a seemingly insignificant part of Vrindavan is actually far more glorious than the king of earth. Not just of earth, of whom? Of heaven, the king of heaven. So, if you consider, that is the earthly planetary system in which there is the earth, and within that earth there is one small village Govardhan, within that there is one tiny place, one village called Vrindavan, within that there is Govardhan. And then far above the earthly planetary system and far bigger than that is the heaven, is Swarga. And Indra is the king of Swarga. So by being the king of the, he's in one de facto, he's not just the king of the heavens. He is in one sense the king of the universe. Not in the entire sense, functional sense. Ultimately it's Lord Vishnu. See, Brahmaji is more like advisor. Brahmaji doesn't involve himself too much in day-to-day administration. So Indra is in one sense the most powerful position in the universe. And his position is thwarted. His power is thwarted by one insignificant hill on the earth. Now generally even the greatest of kings on earth are not able to counter the power of Indra. But here Krishna uses Govardhan Hill for the purpose of thwarting Indra, and thus he is glorifying Govardhan. One of the consistent features of Krishna in Vrindavan is that Krishna's joy doesn't come only in displaying his power. Krishna is God, but Krishna does not delight so much in displaying his power in Vrindavan. If required, he can do that. But Krishna gets much greater joy in bestowing power on his devotees. So, if you see, just like Lord Ram built a bridge to go across Lanka, but he blessed Hanuman with the capacity to leap across the ocean and reach Lanka. So similarly, here, at one level we can say that it is Krishna's glory that Krishna lifted Govardhan. And yes, that is true. But if we consider the Govardhan acting like an umbrella, then if there is a heavy storm, the umbrella, we might hold the umbrella up, But the umbrella for it to not get damaged, to actually protect us, is also indicated that the umbrella is very strong. So Govardhan is glorified by Krishna. And this starts right from the beginning. The very start of the pastime is where Krishna tells the Vrajvasis, the sacrifice you are doing, what is its purpose? And is it scriptural or is it traditional? Now this is a very significant question right in the beginning. What is Krishna is saying is that everything traditional is not necessarily scriptural. Nowadays there is a lot of concern that, say, as the times are changing and we are adjusting to the times, are we compromising? Are we deviating? And yes, that's a valid concern. But it's important to know that deviation can come not just from the contemporary world. Deviation can come from the tradition also. So everything in the tradition is not necessarily pure. And Krishna is differentiating. So for example, the caste system is something which has been a part of the tradition in India. But it is the part of the tradition that has actually destroyed the spirituality of India. So in this world, padam padam yadvipadam, danger is everywhere. That means when there is deviation, so if this is the living tradition, this is the contemporary world, and this is the past tradition. So now, the past, from where there is tradition, and this is the contemporary world. So now deviation can come from the contemporary world. So we might go away from Krishna, but deviation can come even from the tradition. So that's why within what is considered traditional, there is something which is considered scriptural. And this is what we are meant to follow. Now this doesn't mean everything traditional has to be rejected. There may be many things in the tradition which can also be compatible with what is scriptural, even if they are not directly scriptural. But the point over here is Krishna is making this difference, that everything traditional is not necessarily scriptural. So for example, now as we devotees start practicing bhakti, now we all come from our own traditions. We may have our kuldaivat, we may all have our traditions. And we come to Srila Prabhupada and we come to the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. So within our practice of Krishna consciousness, what all elements of, say, bhakti or piety from our tradition do we bring in? What is acceptable? What is not acceptable? So these are questions which have to be carefully answered. That just because something is traditional does not necessarily mean it is scriptural. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was talking with the Tattvavadis, he said that while Madhvacharya is laudable in terms of how he refuted Mayavad, but still you emphasized too much on the caste system, on Varanas, and that can dilute the potency of bhakti. So even at that time, Mahaprabhu is talking about what was going on in the Madhva tradition. Not everything that is going on in the tradition is necessarily according to scripture. This is not to single out any particular tradition. It's to illustrate the point that every tradition is vulnerable to contamination coming even from the past. So Krishna asks, is this scriptural? Is this tradition? Is this traditional? And then Krishna starts talking with the Vrajvasis and he says that actually, if you really want to be grateful for the fact that we are successful at Goraksha, at cow care, and you want to acknowledge that, then we don't have to go to Indra for worshipping him. Actually, our success in Goseva, in cow care, depends on Govardhan. It is Govardhan who is giving us reins. Is he? Not really. So what was Krishna's logic? Krishna is saying that actually Indra is bound to give us reins. And if we do our karma, he is bound to give us reins. Then we don't need to do anything to please him separately. If at all you want to please anyone, we can please Govardhan by doing his puja. So here, what is Krishna doing? Our acharyas explain that Krishna is actually talking here of a philosophy known as Karma Mimamsa. Now in the Vedic tradition, see, the Vedas are a vast body of knowledge. According to estimates, there are 1 lakh verses in the Vedas. Now how much of that is existent is also a matter of question right now. But it's a huge body of knowledge. And what does this body of knowledge mean? That different people have interpreted it differently. So for example, we may study the same body of knowledge and one group of thinkers may come up with one conclusion, another may come out with another conclusion. And like that, 6 groups of thinkers have taken the same Vedas and have come up with different conclusions. So these led to the what is called as the Shad Darshanas, the 6 systems of philosophy. And we follow what is called as Vedanta. So Veda and Vedanta are not the same thing. Vedic and Vedantic are not exactly the same thing. Vedic means what follows the Vedas. Vedanta is one particular understanding of Veda. Now of course, in the Vedanta Sutra, how the Vedantic understanding is the correct understanding is analyzed by comparing with other schools of thought. Now, but one of the other systems of philosophy is Mimamsa. So Krishna is here speaking the philosophy of Mimamsa. And what is this philosophy of Mimamsa? It is basically the idea that even if there are any gods, gods are under the laws, not above the laws. So gods are under the laws. In Western philosophy, this idea is called as deism. Now there are some differences between Karma Mimamsa and deism, but they are largely similar. What is the idea over here? That if we consider God, what is the role of God and its relationship with the universe? So traditionally, that God is the creator and God is the controller. When both are understood, this is theism. When God is considered to be neither the creator nor the controller, he just doesn't exist, that is atheism. But in between is the idea that God is the creator but not the controller. That is deism. So that means, it's like if we consider a clock. Now, the clock clearly has a designer, a creator. But after they make the clock and they sell the clock, now they don't have any control over the clock. So it's up to us to operate the clock. If we give it the battery, then it will work accordingly. If we change the timing will change. So the idea is the manufacturer is no longer the controller right now. So deism is the idea that God is the creator but not the controller. And Karma Mimamsa is something similar to that. The idea is that the devatas are not having any independent power to control the laws. They are also under the control of the laws. That means that if the law is that, you know, we offer this particular thing and we get this particular result, then the officials involved don't have any power to intervene. They don't have any discretion. You know, if this is your stipulation, this is what you will get. If this is not, you're not meeting this criteria, you're not going to get this. So that, now, of course, the laws are there, but do the authorities have any discretionary power? That is the key question. So deism or mimamsa, which are similar, mimamsa hold that the devas have no discretionary power. Now this is not the teaching of Vedanta, and this is refuted by our acharyas, and the Bhagavatam is clearly focusing on Vedanta. So the philosophy in that sense, now if all this seems too complicated, don't worry. The point of this whole pastime is something different. But I'm just explaining what Krishna is doing. That Krishna is actually speaking a philosophy that is considered wrong. That the acharyas are saying that this is not the teaching of the Vedas. So often when we want to comprehend something, what is being said, we need to look at the content of what is being said, and we also need to look at the context of what is being said. In fact, context can be so important that here it is the absolute truth speaking, but the absolute truth is speaking what is not the absolute truth. So even Krishna, the absolute truth, the absolute truth speech may not be the absolute truth. So how is this possible? Well, that is the point of Leela. Leela means Krishna does what is required for reciprocating love with his devotees. And therefore, sometimes he may not speak the absolute truth. So, we see this earlier also in the Bhagavatam. In the Bali Maharaj pastime, when Vamandev comes, Vamandev is glorifying Bali Maharaj. And he says, your ancestors were so powerful that when Hiranyaksha went around in search of Vishnu to kill him, Vishnu realized that there is no place in the universe where he can stay safe from Hiranyaksha. And therefore, he decided the only hiding place is in Hiranyaksha's heart only. Now, the Lord is always there in everyone's heart. And the Lord was not running away from Hiranyaksha. But here, the Acharya described that the Lord is simply having fun. See, the Lord has a sense of humor. And sometimes, when something is being spoken, from the context, we can understand that this is meant to be a joke. Isn't it? Now, sometimes people who don't get a joke, they become the joke, isn't it? In India, we use the word tube light. The tube light doesn't turn on immediately. In here, tube lights also turn on immediately. But the tube light, if you press the button, the bulb turns on immediately. The tube light doesn't turn on immediately. So tube light is a person who doesn't get a joke when you make the joke. Of course, when you make a joke and people don't get the joke, then either it is the people who are the joke or the person who speaks the joke becomes the joke. Isn't it? So, either way, Krishna has a sense of humor. And here, Krishna is saying that actually, we don't need to worship the devatas. We can worship Govardhan. Now, if you see, this logic is actually so questionable. If by doing our karma, we are going to get the results, And that is the reason why we should not worship Indra. Then by that reason, there is no need to worship even Govardhan. Is it right? That, okay, if we are, by our karma we are going to get rains, then if rains are going to come, then even grass is going to come. So if Indra is not doing anything special, then even Govardhan is not doing anything special. But Madhuraya Gira Valgu Vakyaya Buddha Manogyaya Pushkarekshana. The gopis describe Krishna's speaking prowess. And they say that Madhuraya Gira, that your speech, your voice itself is so sweet. And then Valgu Vakyaya, not only is the tone of your voice sweet, but the words you speak are also so enticing. They are also so sweet. And how sweet are they? See, there are some people who are said to be sweet talkers. Sweet talkers means they flatter other people and then they fool those people. So, now, generally, if somebody gets carried away by a sweet talker, it's understood that maybe that person is not so intelligent. A really intelligent person won't be carried away by empty words. But it is said here, Buddha Manogyaya. Krishna, your tone and your words are so sweet that even the wise people get bewildered. Even those who are intelligent get bewildered. It's like Krishna told Duryodhan when he was going to see his mother before the final day's war, that his mother had told him, "You come to me in the same condition in which you were born." So the politically correct or the proper way of saying is that not that person is unclothed. He says clothed by the directions. That's just a polite way of saying not clothed. So come that way. Krishna said, you know, when your mother said come to me, you are born. He says that, you know, you are a grown up man now. You know, at least cover your private parts before you go. Yeah. I think that's right, isn't it? So Duryodhan did that, and that's how his thighs were vulnerable when Bhima attacked him eventually. So the point is, now Duryodhan was no fool. Of course, we could say he was foolish in the sense that he did not recognize Krishna's supremacy. But still he was intelligent in his own way. That's how he was able to get 11 Akshahunis of warriors to assist him. That's how he got all his 99 brothers to follow him. Isn't it? It's not easy. You know, if any of you have one younger sibling, try to get that sibling to obey you. And see how difficult it is. So Duryodhan was no fool. But Krishna was able to persuade Duryodhan. So Buddha Manogyaya. So similarly here, Krishna persuaded the Vrajavasis that we should worship Govardhan instead of Indra. And Vrajavasi said, yeah, you know, what you're saying makes sense. But let's first worship Indra and then we can do a separate puja for Govardhan. And Krishna said, Shubhasya Shigram. If at all we have to worship, then why delay? Just take all that you have done for Indra and all the paraphernalia, use it for Govardhan. So Krishna, in one sense, is glorifying Govardhan over here, but he is doing something more. And when we talk about his reciprocation with Indra, we'll come to that. But here, Krishna, for him, philosophy is here just a tool. Now here, Krishna is not like an acharya who is instructing people. When Krishna speaks the Bhagavad Gita, at that time, Arjuna has surrendered to him. Arjuna has said, Shishyasteham, Shadhimam Tvam Prapannam, in 2.7. And then, at that time, in a formal role of education, what Krishna speaks, at that time what he speaks will be the absolute truth. But when Krishna is just having fun with his devotees, then for him at that time in philosophy, is a tool. And Krishna may speak a philosophy that is not necessarily aligned with reality, just for the purpose of pursuing his lila. So then, as he moves forward, Krishna lived, the whole pastime moves forward, and they come to the other stages of the pastime. But right now we are focusing on the glorifying of Govardhan. So when Krishna tells the Brajavasis, when the rain starts showering, let us go to Govardhan and let's take shelter of Govardhan. He says, we have worshipped Govardhan and therefore Govardhan will protect us. So the Brajavasis, how is Govardhan going to protect us? What does it mean? But they follow Krishna. And Krishna goes there and Krishna just lifts Govardhan up. And then at that time, the Vrajavasis, they feel, Krishna, how have you lifted Govardhan? And Krishna says, actually, I have not lifted Govardhan. Govardhan is so pleased with the fact that we have served him that he is like a yogi. And yogis have the power of levitating. No, levitating means rising above the ground. They can just simply float in the sky. So he says that actually Govardhan is levitating in ecstasy. And while he is levitating in ecstasy, we are all protected under him. Then one of the Gopas says, if he is really levitating, then remove your finger. So basically, Krishna gives all credit to Govardhan. He said, it is Govardhan who is protecting us. And then, the way the pastime unfolds, not only does Govardhan protect the Vrajavasis, but Govardhan itself is not even slightly harmed. It's like, sometimes somebody, some enemy, is trying to, say, destroy a fort and come in and destroy the kingdom that is there, or destroy the citizens or the king or the soldiers who are there inside the fort. And you attack the fort again and again and again, and finally they break the fort and then they plunder the people inside. But somebody sends cannons and bombs and drones nowadays, and even the fort does not get scratched. I think, what is this fort made of? Isn't it? So for Govardhan it is like that. Not only is nobody under Govardhan harmed, nobody on Govardhan also is harmed. In Anandandaman Champu, Kavi Karanapur describes that despite all of the torrential rains that Indra sends, not even a leaf on Govardhan is damaged. Everything stays as it is. So Krishna here is glorifying Govardhan by telling that his devotee is so powerful that actually no one, even a great devata like Indra, cannot harm him. So that is the first part of the reciprocations that are happening. What is the acronym we are discussing? Great. So now R is relishing. So Krishna is relishing love with whom? With the Vrajavasis. Yes. So it's a time of great danger at one level, but the danger is completely forgotten. Sometimes it is said that when people are close to death, or they are close to great danger, now there is great soul searching. What did I really do with my life? And people want to forgive each other, seek forgiveness from other persons. And that kind of soul searching normally happens when you are close to death. Mm-hmm. But in this case, there is no soul searching because the soul is already found. In fact, the whole of who is a part of the soul, that is also already found. So the Vrajavasis are simply relishing the reciprocation of love with Krishna. It's for 7 days and 7 nights they are together, but that there is great danger that is completely forgotten. And they're just immersed. And in this sense, Vishwanathipa Thakur explains that actually Indra's actions, while if we consider Indra and Brahma, they are two different things. Now Indra's actions at one level, if it's in terms of harm, Indra's actions were more harmful than Brahma's. Indra tried to destroy the Vrajavasis. Brahma just took away some of the gopas and the cows, some of the Vrajavasis, the gopas and the cows. And he just put them in a cave. So in one sense, the offense of Indra in terms of the harm attempted, it was not succeeded, but even the harm attempted, is much, much greater. However, what happens is, in terms of the pleasure that Krishna gets, actually it is Indra's actions which give greater pleasure to Krishna than Brahma's actions. Why? Because Brahma's actions lead to separation, whereas Indra's actions bring union. And the Vrajavasis are all united with Krishna for 7 days and seven nights. And there is just the endless reciprocation of love at that time. All the Vrajavasis are there. In fact, there is practically no other pastime where Krishna is reciprocating love with all the Vrajavasis at the same time. Books like Govinda Lilamrat and Dhyana Mangala, the Dhyanamrata, those books describe how Krishna performs different pastimes at different times of the day. And in the morning, Krishna is performing pastimes with his parents, with Yashoda and others who bathe him and feed him. In the daytime, Krishna goes to the forest and he's performing pastimes with the gopas. And in night time, he performs pastimes with the gopis. So Krishna reciprocates with different devotees at different times. But here in Govardhan Leela, Krishna at one time gets to reciprocate love with all his devotees. And in that sense, Krishna is actually pleased. Although Krishna is displeased with Indra in one sense for what he has done, Krishna is also pleased because the end result is good. So, in general, whenever any action, it's to be judged. Now, whether the action is good or bad, there are three factors. The content of the action, what was done, the intent of the action, why it was done, and the consequence, what resulted from the action. So, now, the content of the action of Indra was terrible. He tried to destroy the Vrajavasis. So, in today's world, today's legal language, we would call it as a horrendous abuse of power. Isn't it? It's a horrendous abuse of power. Even if we say the Vrajavasis are wrong in not doing yajna, even if we grant that thing. That, okay, like somebody is supposed to pay taxes and say a particular locality refuses to pay taxes. Okay, if you don't pay taxes, then maybe cut off the electric supply or whatever. But if a particular locality refuses to pay taxes, and then you go and nuke the whole locality, just destroy everyone, that's outrageous abuse of power. So, in terms of what Indra did was outrageous. His intent was also, he was angry, but the result was good. Result was that Krishna saw that something good has come out of it, and he accepted that. So this is the meaning of Krishna being Bhavagrahi. Bhavagrahi means it's not just that Krishna sees the intent, and only with the intent is good, Krishna accepts it. Krishna sees, is there anything good about what you did? If the action is good, that's wonderful. If the intent is good, that's wonderful. Even if the action is not good, even if the result comes out good, that is also wonderful. Krishna appreciates that. So that's why any way we connect with Krishna, that is good. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that we just do anything and think the consequence will be good. And we can't take credit if we wanted to do a bad thing, but some good thing happens sometimes. Then it's not that we can take credit for that. But say Hiranyakashipu tried to persecute Prahlad. But the result of that was that Prahlad's glory is more and more became revealed to the world. Now, does that mean the Lord is pleased with Hiranyakashipu also? Well, yes, Hiranyakashipu comes as a part of the Lord's pastimes. Hiranyakashipu had to be punished at a material level. But still, the Lord elevated and liberated even Hiranyakashipu. So the point is that Krishna just is looking for some good somewhere. And Krishna was pleased even with Indra because he had the opportunity to reciprocate love with all his devotees. And during this particular pastime, the love he was reciprocating was with primarily Mother Yashoda was concerned. Krishna, you're lifting up such a big hill. You must be tired. Please eat something now. So I'll give you some butter. So she starts offering him butter and Krishna. And then Krishna is taking the butter and Krishna is relishing it. And then all the gopas say, hey, now for the gopas, Krishna is just another of the cowherd boys. He says, Krishna, you are lifting this. Can we also lift it? So Krishna says, okay, you also put your hand. So they all put their hands over there. And then they say, Krishna, now you remove your hand. No, I'm not going to remove my hand. So then Krishna is having fun with so Madhumangal is like, Madhumangal is a character who is often providing comic relief in in Krishna's pastimes. So when Yashodama is feeding Madhumangal, she's feeding Krishna, so Madhumangal says, I'm also hungry. So Yashodama says, you are always hungry. And he says, my Krishna is doing such hard work. He is lifting up this whole hill. He needs food. You wait for some time. And Madhumangal says, how long I have to wait right now? So then, as now it is of course at one level said that the Vrajavasis, they forget about food, sleep, thirst and everything. But the point is, yes, it is not that hunger, thirst or food, these divert their focus from Krishna. But if food and hunger, these can play a part in Krishna's pastime over there, then thus enhance the flavor of Krishna's pastimes. And while Krishna is performing this pastime, now Krishna is looking at everyone. Of course, everyone is looking at Krishna. Krishna's glances are going towards everyone. And then Krishna looks at Radharani. So now at this point Krishna is still young. Krishna is not yet the Purvarag, the arrival of puberty and the attraction of the Madhurya Ras has not yet manifested. But there is Purvarag is still there to some extent. It is not explicitly there, but still when Krishna looks at Radharani, she is looking at Krishna with such love, such admiration, such joy. See how wonderful my Krishna is. That just seeing that love shakes Krishna. And when he's shaken, his heart is shaken by seeing how much is her love for me. And his heart is shaken and his fingers start shaking. And when his fingers start shaking, then everybody is panicking. All the Gopas, immediately they take their hands and they take their sticks and they try to support Govardhan. And then Madhumangal says, Krishna, watch out. If you want to eat more, but don't let this go. And then Krishna is holding Govardhan up and Krishna thinks, you know, looking at Radharani is very dangerous. I won't look at her. But still he can't resist sneaking some glances at her in between. And Krishna is sweetly reciprocating love with the Vrajavasis. And when 7 days pass like this, It's just so relishable that none of the Vrajvasis feel that it has been such a long time. It's that they, you know, Krishna tells them that actually now the rain has stopped. Now you can go. Oh, it stopped so quickly. It stopped so quickly. See, when we are doing something we love, then we just lose sense of time. We are so absorbed, we don't know how time is passing. And when we are doing something which we don't love, then we don't lose sense of time, we lose sense.
We start getting bored, we start getting annoyed. What is happening over here? When is this going to get over? So sometimes we are doing japa and the mala is not getting over only. So we take out the beads. You know, did somebody change the beads here? Instead of 108, there are 1008 beads over here, it seems. So the Vrajvasis has such a sweet reciprocation of love. And Krishna satisfies the hearts of all the Vrajvasis. Although they have not eaten for 7 days, they have not drunk for 7 days, they have been drinking and eating the beauty of Krishna, and they have been relishing the love of Krishna, and they are fully content. Not just content, they are filled with ecstasy. And this is the heart of the pastime. That the Govardhan Leela is described in the 10th canto, and it's also described by our acharyas, say Nanandavan Champu, Gopal Champu. And within that, the acharyas don't make much of a halabu about, oh, Krishna lifted Govardhan, how wonderful Krishna is. Yeah, there are a few statements like that. But yeah, that is done. Yeah, Krishna can do it. What's the big deal about it? Yes, Krishna lifted Govardhan. They focus more on the reciprocation of love between the Vrajvasis and Krishna that happens over there. So that's the second part. The third is A. So A is altering. Altering means here Krishna is altering the mentality of Indra. He is not just punishing Indra. Ultimately, like sometimes we say, you need an attitude adjustment. You know, that is not the most polite thing to say to someone. But he is altering the view of Indra. Indra is thinking that I have independent power. And Sthiyatam Swadhikareshu, in the verse that we discuss, be situated in your position, but Mad Anushasanam. You understand that you are within my jurisdiction. You are under me. So now the way Krishna works here is interesting. That Indra is intoxicated with power. And sometimes there are two ways. If there is a disease, then one way is that the disease is immediately treated and cured. But sometimes some people have a disease and they are in denial that they have the disease. No, nothing is wrong with me. That is what is wrong with you. You know? So when somebody thinks nothing is wrong with them, then sometimes what may be done is that they are exposed to stimuli which will aggravate the disease. And then they realize, oh, something is really wrong with me. So similarly, Indra has some power. He has a lot of power and he has a lot of ego. Now, when we have ego, what does ego mean? It means edging God out. So, we push God from his position and we put ourselves in the position of God. So, Indra was thinking that I am this all-powerful being. And when this happened, when he had this mentality, at that time he thought that who are these upstarts? That these Vrajavasis, how dare they stop my puja? Now, from an absolute perspective or from a bigger perspective, Vrindavan is just one small village on earth. If Indra Puja is not done, Indra is not going to face a big loss because of that. It's not that Indra is desperately dependent for his revenues on Vrindavan's yajna. It's not going to make much of a big difference. It's like if there is a big king and there's one small province somewhere and that province doesn't pay its taxes. Okay, it's not that those taxes are going to make a big difference. But the king may say, you know, you dare challenge my power. That is outrageous. See, generally when the yajna was performed, the yajna had many different purposes. One was, of course, like taxes or tributes. The yajna devan bhavitanena te deva bhavayantuva. Prabhupada says that when we perform yajna, we satisfy the devatas. So one was, it was providing the taxes. But the other was also, it was a matter of respect. Now, respect is a more positive word. Prestige could be a little more negative word. Then it was also an occasion for socialization, that various people would come together. Yajna would be a big occasion, just like our festivals. Festivals, we are centered on glorifying Krishna, but Janmashtami, when we are there practically all day, we are meeting other devotees, socializing with them. So if you see in the Daksha Yajna, Daksha was not really concerned about the spiritual aspect. So ultimately it is, yajna is also meant for devotion, it is meant for pleasing the Lord. He was not really concerned about the spiritual aspects, he was concerned more about the social and prestige aspects. And that is why when Shiva didn't offer him respect, his whole thing I have done so that everyone knows how great I am. And if somebody doesn't acknowledge my greatness, how great a problem it is, isn't it? It's like some devotee, you know, we as devotees can also have a lot of ego. If we come to a temple and we are a senior devotee, we come to the temple and everybody bows down to offer obeisance. And we look at who didn't bow down. So, sometimes the ego can be such a demoniac thing. But so similarly, for Indra, at one level, the Vrajavasi is not offering respects. Not offering the yajna was not a big problem practically. But it was that they stopped my yajna, that's bad enough. And then on top of that, it's like suppose, you know, somebody is supposed to be invited as a chief guest for a particular event. And then they told, you know, this invitation is withdrawn. Really? What happened? You know, is the event cancelled? No, the event is going on. Then who is the chief guest? Now some insignificant nobody is brought to replace you. Now that is an even greater insult. Isn't it? You replace me with this person. Instead, it just seems outrageous. So, like that, Indra becomes jealous. Like say two people are dating and their relationship and then they break up. They use the word break up, but actually people break down. There's no up over there, isn't it? But then say they break up and then people are always interested in their ex. You know, who is that person dating now? And if that person, you know, if some person is very proud of their looks, and they see you replace me with that person. Oh, what is that person? God, nothing. So there is that natural jealousy that comes up. So what happens is Indra feels you replaced my puja and doing this puja to this insignificant hill. Hey, no one even heard of this hill before this. So he is enraged. And when he's enraged like that, that rage comes out. Now on top of that, see, Indra also comes to know, okay, how did this happen? How did the Vrajavasi stop my puja? Krishna told them. What did Krishna tell them? And then he comes to know what Krishna spoke, all this Mimamsa philosophy. So it's like, you know, when you want to irritate someone. We invite
somebody for a event,
and they say they will come and they don't come. And they said, don't come. And they say that, okay, why couldn't you come? Later on, we meet and ask them, you know, I was sick. Well, I saw on your Facebook that you had gone for an outing. Isn't it? So if you are going to speak a lie, at least don't insult my intelligence by speaking an unbelievable lie. At least respect my intelligence enough so that I can believe your lie, isn't it? So sometimes people lie and they don't even try to hide the fact that they are lying. So when Indra gives a reason, and Krishna gives a reason, that reason is not even a reasonable reason. So basically what Krishna is doing is that he is provoking Indra. Now we may say, why does Krishna want to provoke Indra? Normally you consider provoking others is not a good thing to do. But he's provoking for a particular reason. Like I said, if a person is sick and is in denial of sickness, then the symptoms of the sickness need to be triggered. And that person realizes, I'm sick. So somebody may have a lot of ego. And they say, I don't have any ego. Like some people are very mentally disturbed. You tell them, maybe you should calm down. I'm as calm as the Pacific Ocean. Yes, you are as calm as the Pacific Ocean with a tsunami in it. But if they don't, then what happens is you speak something which provokes them. And then, hey, how do you speak like this to me? Oh yeah, I'm not actually calm, isn't it? So then they realize it. So what Krishna is doing is, he's deliberately provoking Indra. Krishna could have let Indra's Puja go on. Krishna could have done Govardhan Puja separately. But Krishna took the Indra Puja and replaced it with Govardhan Puja and also spoke the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, which Indra knew is false, which Krishna also knew is false. But all this is just to provoke Indra. Now, why do you provoke? Because when he is provoked, what does he do? Everybody can get provoked in the world. The world is a provocative place. But there are certain boundaries that are never meant to be crossed. See, we all may get angry and people may do things that anger us. But we may have our own boundaries based on our culture. That is, even if I get angry, I'm not going to use swear words. I may yell at someone, but I'm not going to use swear words. Or no matter how angry I get, I'm not going to punch a person, I'm not going to physically attack a person. Or no matter how angry I get, I'm not going to take a knife or a gun and attack someone. So we all have certain boundaries. Now, what are our actual boundaries? We may think this is something which I will never do. But when we are provoked, we realize that there are many things which we thought we would not do, but we did that. And that's when we start realizing how severe, say, my anger issue is. If I get angry and I say, I'll just yell at someone for a few minutes. That's not good. But okay, that's okay. But if somebody gets angry and starts taking a gun to shoot people, that means it's a really serious issue. So what Krishna did by provoking Indra is to show him how much his ego was. The ego, its magnitude, how strong it is. For us, if there is lust within us, anger within us, ego within us, how do we know what its magnitude is? That depends on the provocation. So in one sense, our provocations, they reveal our boundaries. Or you could also say they reveal our lack of boundaries. Some people may have just no sense of boundaries at all. So normally they might behave like a very gentle, sweet person. And when they are provoked, they just change from Prahlad to Hiranyakashipu. So in general, if you want to know a person, we also want to know how is this person, not just at their best, but also at their worst. If we truly love a person, we want to love the person at their best and at their worst. So here what Krishna wanted to do was reveal to Indra himself how much his ego was. And Indra did not realize it till he used all his power. That rage was there. And when that rage was there, he just abused his power and tried to destroy Vrindavan. Not just by rains, not just by storms, but rains, storms and thunderbolt and lightning. It is all the power that he had. Earlier I said, like, if somebody doesn't pay taxes, you use nuclear weapons. It's not just nuclear weapons, biological weapons, chemical weapons, all the weapons that you have. Like, oh, the whole weapon supply is exhausted. And then Indra starts thinking, what did I do? What did I do over here? And that's when he comes to apologize. And that's when Krishna is instructing him. Krishna says that you got too carried away by your power. And Indra also realizes it. And sometimes somebody may say you have anger issues. But we may say, no, I don't have any anger issues. You know, I don't have anger issues. You have hypersensitivity issues. Small things, you get worked up about them. Now, but when in our own eyes, out of anger, we do certain things which we know are unacceptable, that's when we realize. So, to alter Indra's disposition, to take him from the position of ego to the position of humility, Krishna did all this. Krishna provoked him and exposed to him his utter lack of boundaries. Now, this doesn't mean we go about provoking each other to show them their lack of boundaries. No, we try to work in more amicable ways. But we all, you know, every day, maybe when we do our daily review, we can look at what was the worst thing that I did today. We can look at what was the best thing that I did. What did I offer to Krishna today? But also, what was the worst thing that I did today? If we do that, then we will also realize that, okay, no, I just don't have... maybe I thought that I'm sense-controlled or I'm this or I'm that, but maybe I need work. So Krishna altered Indra's disposition, and that was his kindness. It was, of course, tough love. While Indra was going through it, it was painful for him. But Indra was transformed by it. So beyond that, what are the two more points? I'll try to complete in 5-7 minutes now. D is demonstrating. Now Krishna is glorifying Govardhan, but Krishna is also demonstrating how his devotees are greater than devatas. It is not just the Vrajavasis are greater than the Indra, but also Surabhi is greater than Indra. Now if you consider in Swarga, Indra is the king and Surabhi is just a cow. Well, she's important, but even Swarga's hierarchy, she's not very important. But when Indra has to seek forgiveness, Indra realizes I've offended him, Krishna, so much that he goes to Brahma and Brahma says, even I can't help you over here. I have a relationship with Krishna, but it's not so close. You need to go to somebody who really has a close relationship with Krishna, who is very dear to Krishna. And that is Surabhi. So, you know, when somebody is very angry, then what happens is, you know, if they see the person who has provoked them, they'll become even angrier. But if they see someone they love, then they'll just feel so joyful. And after that, the person who's angered them also comes forward. Okay, yeah, then the anger has gone down. So, like that, they see that devatas have also learned from experience. In the Prahalad pastime, the devatas all try to pacify Narasimhadev first. And all of them fail. And it's like it's a spectacular failure. Normally, we talk about spectacular success. It's a spectacular. All these big devatas, they are the cosmic administrators. They don't succeed. And then Brahma says, see, the only thing that Prahlad, you go and offer prayers. And even before Prahlad offers prayers, the Lord is so happy to see him. The Lord, who is like a ferocious lion, becomes like a gentle pussycat. So sweet. And so Brahmaji also knows this. So from that Narasimha Leela, Brahmaji says that actually, you know, you need to have some devotee. So he says, you take Surbhi and let Surbhi be ahead of you. And when the Lord sees Surbhi, he is so pleased with her. And just the sight of Surbhi pleases, and then Indra comes from behind Surbhi. Oh, okay. And then Krishna forgives Indra also. So he's demonstrating how the devotees are greater than the devatas. In the material hierarchy, the devatas are very powerful. But in Krishna's eyes, the devotees are even greater. And for us, it is important to remember that there are, for example, if we consider even in our devotional hierarchy, in our devotional community, there may be certain devotees who are in administrative positions. And of course, we respect them for the service that they are doing. But there may be devotees who may not have any administrative positions. But if they are senior devotees, if they are dedicated devotees, we need to offer respects to them also. They have done service to Krishna for whatever reason. They may not be in the hierarchy of power. Maybe that's not their inclination, that's not their interest. But if they have done service to Krishna, they are dear to Krishna. And we need to respect them. So that is demonstrating. And the last one is E is enriching. So Krishna is enriching the hearts of all of us through such pastimes. You know, Kunti Maharani gives various reasons why Krishna descends to the world. And she says the final reason is that you descend to perform pastimes which can elevate people. Bhavesmin klishmananam avidya kama karma bhi shravan smaran arhani karishyan iti kechana. That for the shravan and smaran to be done by posterity, by future generations of devotees, Krishna, you perform pastimes. So through these pastimes, Krishna is actually providing us opportunity for enriching our hearts. The more we remember these pastimes, the more we relish these pastimes. And among various pastimes, the Govardhan Leela is an extremely dramatic pastime. So we all can, by remembering the, not just remembering the pastime, not just relishing the pastime. Now some pastimes can be remembered and relished, but there are some pastimes which can be not just remembered and relished, they can also be reenacted. And that makes them especially special. That we can actually, so reenactment can be done through, we perform dramas. But Govardhan Leela is where, I believe today evening, we'll be actually building a Govardhan of various food items and various paraphernalia, and we'll be circumambulating that. So the reenacting of the pastime can help us to become even more absorbed in the pastime. And in general, for all of us, as we sing in the Damodar Ashtakam, in the last line, Nam Ananta Leelaya Devaya Tubhyam, that Krishna has unlimited pastimes. Now, in the Damodar Leela specifically, he said that even one pastime can give us immense immersion. Sadame manasya virashtam kimanyai. Let this one pastime keep replaying in my heart, and I can just relish it forever. So the idea is that Krishna has unlimited pastimes, and any one pastime, if somehow it captivates our heart, the pastime may captivate our heart through one image. You know, we just look at the image of Krishna lifting Govardhan. And this one devotee friend of mine, he loves this Govardhan Leela so much. He said that he has collected more than 500 paintings of Govardhan Leela. Rajasthani art, there is Braja art, there is North Indian art, and there is now ISKCON devotees make paintings. So he says, till now, whatever paintings I can find, I tried to find, and now he is making a coffee table book of just Govardhan Leela, depicted by different artists in different ways. And he sent me some other pictures. So beautiful it is. So one pastime we can remember. Sometimes it may not be just one picture or one pastime, the visual image. It could be a verbal image. One verse that describes a pastime. We just remember one verse. Now there is Govardhan Ashtakam. Now we might find Ashtakam is very big for me. Okay, remember one verse. Take one line from one verse. And sometimes just repeating that one line can give us immersion in the pastime. So, how Krishna can enrich our heart is actually a mystery. But if we just are receptive, we'll find that there are so many ways in which Krishna is ready to enrich our heart. Sometimes just repeating one line, that can be so relishable. We sometimes memorize verses, but we memorize verses primarily for quoting in classes. But that's good, but we memorize verses for offering before the deities, for our own contemplation. So we could take one song, one Vaishnava song, maybe one line from that song, and just recite that. I know, I was in Vrindavan some time ago, and I have a friend who visits Vrindavan. He says that there's one devotee over there. He has taken, especially in Kartik, he takes one pastime, and in Kartik almost every day is like a festival. So he has tried to find verses that describe each pastime for each day. Say we have Bahulashtami, we have Govardhan Leela, we have this. So he says, I take one verse which describes that pastime. And on that day, I will recite that verse 1008 times. So now I found that quite an intoxicating way to do things. Just repeat that one verse. And it could be a Sanskrit verse, it could be a Bengali verse, it could be a prayer that we make in our own words, if that's what gives us absorption. But the point is, this is an opportunity for us to enrich our heart. And especially on the day when the pastime has been performed, that is a special day when the mercy is available even more. So ultimately, Krishna wants to enrich the hearts of each one of us with His love, with His loving presence. The enrichment of our heart depends on what is playing and replaying in our heart. If what is playing and replaying in our heart is our grievances, oh, this person spoke like this to me and this didn't happen in my life and that went wrong, it could be also, I made such a mess of things. If that's what is replaying in our heart, we will always be impoverished. Now, it could be our mistakes, it could be others' mistakes, it could be the world's nature. Yeah, these are all realities. But the bigger reality is that Krishna is still playing the flute. Krishna is still the all-attractive Lord. And when we somehow start getting Krishna's Leela to start replaying in our heart, then that is what will enrich our heart. So we can try to find out, how we can, in somehow or the other, be replaying Krishna Leela. Of course, chanting the holy names is also replaying a sound of the holy name in our heart. Yena kena prakarena. Whatever way works for us, enrichment is available if we can just change the tape, the soundtrack, the video track, whatever it is that is replaying in our hearts. And the more it becomes Krishna centered, the more our heart will become enriched. So replaying Krishna Leela is enriching. Replaying, you can say Maya Leela. The various things that happen in this material world, whether it is craving or lamenting, that is simply impoverishing. So Krishna, by being Ananda Leelaya Devaya Tubhyam, by having unlimited pastimes, is offering us unlimited opportunities for enrichment. I'll summarize what we discussed today. We talked about the Govardhan Leela in terms of reciprocation. So, five reciprocations within Govardhan Leela. What was the acronym? Grade. So, what was G? Does anyone remember? Yes, G was glorifying. So, Krishna glorifies Govardhan. That Govardhan, we could say it is Krishna who performed the miracle by lifting Govardhan. But it is Govardhan also was miraculous in the sense that Govardhan was completely unhurt. The Govardhan who might have been unhurt before was unhurt. And Krishna in one sense spoke the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, which was in one sense a false philosophy. But the whole purpose was, so because he simply wanted an excuse for glorifying Govardhan, for worshipping Govardhan and then showing how Govardhan can also protect. So he's saying that it is a Govardhan who is levitating out of ecstasy to protect us. So Krishna didn't even take credit that I am protecting you. So that was the beauty of Krishna in this past. And then what was the next one? R was relishing. So here it is the only pastime in which Krishna is reciprocating love and relishing the reciprocation with all the Vrajavasis at the same time. So in terms of the harm attempted, what Indra did was worse than what Brahma did. But in terms of the effect, the effect was more pleasing to Krishna, and Krishna focused on that. Then after that, A was altering. Yes. So we saw how Indra had great ego, and Krishna provoked Indra so that his ego would become apparent to him, and then he would take remedial action. Just as when a patient is sick and is denial, the sickness symptoms sometimes need to be aggravated so that the patient becomes ready to take treatment. So Krishna aggravated Indra by stopping first the Indra Puja, then giving that Indra Puja to somebody insignificant in Indra's eyes like Govardhan, and then on top of that also giving a false reasoning to do all that. But when what happened, Indra realized that his ego was so great that he had no boundaries. The extent of abuse of power was so horrendous. Then he came to his senses, and that's what made him humble. Then T was demonstrating. Krishna demonstrated how in the normal administrative hierarchy, Indra might be high up, but in Krishna's hierarchy, it was Surabhi, the small cow, who was higher up. And Indra had to approach through Surabhi. And last E was enriching. When Krishna performs these pastimes, it is for us to be enriched by remembering, relishing, reenacting and replaying these pastimes in our heart. So any one pastime, if we can find that we can replay in our heart, and that can change the tape that is playing in our heart at present, then we can become absorbed in Krishna and we can attain Him. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Do we have time for any one or two questions? Yes, please. From
for a wonderful exposition. How to improve our chanting? That's the everyday problem. So please, Krishna, how we can improve our chanting every day? Please tell us.
It's
something.
Always a challenge.
Your realization is a challenge.
My realization is that it's very difficult to improve chanting.
But you can tell a lot of things because you have written a lot of books, so much literature.
Well, I've written books because I can't chant. That's my excuse for doing something other than chanting.
Just few points.
But I would say two, three things. First is that there are some activities that give us devotion. And there are some activities in which we have to bring devotion. Some activities bring devotion for us. For example, if we see the deities, we hear a sweet kirtan, we naturally feel devotional. And that's wonderful. But sometimes when we're chanting, we may not feel devotional. So if the activity is not bringing devotion, then we need to be bringing devotion into that activity. That means before starting that activity, maybe recite some verse, sing a song or something, or have a picture of your favorite picture of the deities. Look at that. And we bring devotion into our heart, and then we bring that devotion into our chanting. Otherwise, it will just be mechanical utterance of words. Second thing is that the mind is going to get distracted. So rather than thinking that I will never let my mind get distracted, we can try to give it some devotional distraction. In the sense that the mind is going to wander, let me have some pictures of Krishna, let me have some Tulsi in front of me, let me maybe have some quotes about the glories of the holy name. And the mind wanders, if it is here at the sound of the holy name, it wanders, instead of letting it go all over the universe, let it go in some circle around it. So we give the mind may stray away, but let it not stay away. We try to give it some distraction which is connected with Krishna, by which we can bring it back to Krishna. And third is, during chanting, at least my experience is, we can't always be focusing on controlling the mind. We also need to negotiate with the mind. That means that each day we have to see what is my level of mind, what is the disposition of my mind today, and then we decide what is an acceptable level of distraction for that day. Some days we could just sit at one place and focus and come close our eyes and chant. Some days we sit and close our eyes and just close our eyes only. There is no chanting happening. So if that is the case, then maybe on that day don't sit, maybe stand, maybe walk and chant. Yeah, walking chanting is not as attentive as, say, sitting chanting. Maybe. But walking chanting is better than sitting and sleeping. Isn't it? So maybe for that day, the acceptable level of distraction can be different. And some days, if we are walking and still we are feeling reasonably focused, then instead of going out for a walk where we are going to see 100 things, we walk in a small same area, so there is not much distraction. Some days our mind is wandering too much, then we may decide that, okay, I'm trying to focus, I'm not able to focus. Then maybe I go out for a walk, but I try to have as much, not that I'm looking at, just looking for distraction while I'm walking around. I'm trying to focus, but if some distraction comes, I try to bring my mind back closer to Krishna. So I think that negotiation is important. If you just try to bring one standard to everyday's chanting, then it becomes that if that standard is not possible, we just get frustrated with ourselves and we quit. Then it just becomes speaking with our lips without any focus at all. So you find out how much can I focus today. Okay.
This brings one point. If the body is too tired, like an old body, old man, can you lie down and chant? Are you allowed to do that or not?
Well, one principle of course is that tatra arpita niyamita smarani nakalaha. There are no rules for chanting. So, of course, one can lie down also and chant. But there are two different things over here. See, one is lying down because one does not have physical energy, but still one has mental alertness. Then that's perfectly fine. Sometimes we are not sleepy, but we just don't have physical energy. Lying down and chanting at that time is perfectly okay. But sometimes lying down is because we are already maybe bored or we are close to lethargic, and then we lie down, it might be very easy to just fall asleep. So it depends, but in principle, any way we can chant, that is good. So even lying down frees us from the physical exertion of energy and enables us to concentrate all that energy on focusing on Krishna, or Krishna holy name, then there's nothing wrong in that.
Thank you.
So, any last question before we stop? Okay.
Thank you for the class, Prabhuji. Just a question regarding the anger. So normally, I understand that the anger rises is because the modes of passion and ignorance are acting on you. It's because of your unfulfilled desire which anger rises. So the modes are the one which causes you to fall in the get angry. So is that correct? And the second thing is, how do you catch yourself while you're practicing Krishna consciousness to stop yourself and come back to mode of goodness?
Well, is anger caused by the modes? Well, there are different ways of analyzing. The modes is one good framework to use. At the same time, we can also say there are some people with whom somehow they seem to bring the worst out of us. Isn't it? You know, there are some people, once I was trying to do some mediation between two people, and one person was saying, I know you are angry with me. Can you tell me what have I done that has made you so angry? The second person said, you exist. Now the second person was not being sarcastic. He was just saying, you know, everything about you angers me. So I think if that is the situation, it's unreasonable. But you know, we can't really do much about it. Somehow we feel that there are certain triggers. Certain people, just the way they talk, the sound of their voice, the sound of their laugh, everything seems to annoy or anger us. Then if that is a trigger, then we need to keep a distance from them. No, that's not the ultimate solution, but at least that's the initial solution till we get some handle on the issue. If we know there are certain provocative people or provocative times, say maybe at the end of the day, you know, if somebody just makes some request that seems too much for me, I explode. Or there are some phases, maybe when we are hungry and food is already delayed, and that time somebody. So we observe ourselves and try to note what our triggers are and try to be in advance, on guard, stay aware of our triggers and stay away from our triggers. So that's quite helpful. Another thing that we can do is that with respect to our boundaries, at least when we cross the boundaries, we are aware of those. Sometimes we may yell at someone, and if that person, if we are much more powerful than that person can't protest, that person can't do anything. So we might even not even notice that incident. But maybe at the end of a day, if we are reviewing our day, you know, hey, that time I spoke that. And then maybe when we're looking back, I noticed how hurt that person felt. Yeah, maybe I should not have spoken like that. So just having some more self-awareness, looking back at each day and looking at how we might have succumbed to a particular artha. That also, when I went over, so that self-awareness also helps. Now, beyond that, of course, as we are practicing bhakti, bhakti will purify us. But how long that purification will take will depend on how deep-rooted the conditioning is. It depends on how intense our practice of bhakti is. So till that purification happens, these two things, you know, cultivating a little more self-awareness and keeping away from our triggers, that can be help. So that won't, even if the mode of passion is there, at least it won't degenerate to the mode of ignorance. We'll rise from there to the mode of goodness. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki.
Jai.
Giriraj Govardhan ki. Govardhan Leela ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Gaur Bhakta Vrind ki. Itai Gaur Premante. Thank you.